Made it very far, so good news for those of you who haven't been here. You hadn't missed much yet. Boy, you weren't kidding, Monty. A little weak over here this week. We're going to have to, y'all need to start talking to some more people on this side. So we're going to be back in Romans chapter 1. I want to start by reading this text from verse 18. So it's Romans 1, 18. If I can figure out where the on button is on this thing. Romans 1, 18 through, I think, the end of the chapter, which I believe is verse 32. I kind of want to read it all together. I'm going to not necessarily correct, but maybe redefine something that, according to Hunter, I didn't do a very good job of explaining last week, so he tells me all of my shortcomings. Starting in verse 18, it says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they're without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking. Their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of an immortal God for images resembling mortal man, birds, animals, and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up to the lust of their hearts, to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies amongst themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the Creator rather than the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions, for their women exchanged natural relations for those who are contrary to nature. And the men likewise gave up unnatural relations with women and were consumed with passions for one another. Men committed shameless acts with men and receiving in themselves the due penalty for their error. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to debased mind, to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Though they know God's righteous decree, that those who practice such things deserve to die. That not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them." Wow. That's kind of a heavy text. This text has been waved around like a battering ram in society that we live in. I've probably done that. But I want to take a step back and look at this, probably more how it was presented. But before I do that, I read a story this week that, you know, when I was talking last week about how we suppress truth, it's hard to kind of identify or explain sometimes. But one person that I read put it this way. It's like taking a beach ball in a swimming pool and trying to hold it under the water. As soon as you let go of it, it pops right back up, right? But we constantly try to bury it. And that's kind of sometimes with suppressing truth. It's like we know it's there, but we pretend like it's not. So the story that I read about was when Patton came to the first Nazi concentration camp that was basically... I'm not even sure what the right term is, but when the war was coming to its conclusion, the first one that they came in and took over, and I don't remember the name of the town. I actually have it up here because I knew I could. I don't even know how to pronounce it, so it's hard for me to remember what I don't even know how to pronounce. Ordruff. So when he came in and they saw the devastation and they saw what was had been going on in this concentration camp, it made them all nauseous to see the reality of what's been going on in this concentration camp, to the point where Patton went and got the mayor and some other townspeople, the mayor of this town, and brought them out to the concentration camp and said, see? And so the mayor and his wife, it is a story has been told that a mayor and his wife, after seeing the devastation of this concentration camp, hung themselves that night. And in a letter that they left, it says, we knew, but we didn't know. And so oftentimes in life, we like to look at things at a glance. It's like we know, but we kind of convince ourselves that we don't. It's looking at something and saying, I know it's there, I know it's real, I know it's valid, but if I choose to think on something else, I can dissipate that understanding, that knowledge. And so when Paul talks about a suppression of truth, what he's trying to exemplify is you know, but you're acting like you don't know. You're pretending it doesn't exist because it doesn't fit the narrative. How you choose to see life. It doesn't fit how you want to live life. And so as a result, you just walk through life pretending like it doesn't exist. And so it's just like these people in this community that's right next to this concentration camp. They knew what was going on out there, but they didn't know. They chose never to look. I think sometimes as Christians, we kind of get into that mindset where we're like, man, I'm just going to, anybody do this? I'm just going to stick my head in the sand and pretend that nothing out there exists other than what I think exists. And so many times we do that with God because God doesn't fit who we choose or who we desire to be. Now this text, and so I wanted to start with that this morning because I don't think I did a good job talking about how we suppress this knowledge of who God is. Even though we know, everyone out there knows. Inherently, they know, but they're choosing not to. They're choosing to see life differently than how it is explained and how it's been revealed. Who God is has been revealed in us and to us. To us through His creation and in us through our consciences. But as we press forward, kind of starting this week, as we talked about a lot of this, these verses last week, we get into this text that becomes kind of a whipping post, if you will. For this reason, God gave them up, verse 26 of chapter 1. For this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions. For their women exchanged natural relations for those who are contrary to nature. And the men likewise gave up natural relations with women who are consumed with passion for one another. Anytime the conversation of homosexuality comes up and a Christian's a part of it, this is one of the texts, one of probably five or six that they go to. And they say, don't you see? I've done that. Anybody else done that? Where it's like, don't you see? This is, and we kind of highlight this because what we see is Paul highlighting it. Paul highlighting this as something that God, and there's, that this is, I actually have some notes today. Can you believe that? It's because I think there's so much here that it's even sometimes hard for me to know exactly how to present this in a way that creates understanding for us. But all of this starts with the suppression of who God is. And when we suppress who God is, what we're saying is I'm taking myself, my desires, my intentions, and I'm elevating them above God. I'm suppressing who God is and elevating who I am. It's the me monster. It's the monster of me. Everything revolves around me. But what I want to highlight is though that this text oftentimes gets triggered for homosexual behavior and the wrongness of it. I will tell you this morning unequivocally, homosexuality is wrong. It is sinful. It will separate you from who God is. I want to make that statement very clear up front, because where we're headed, there's going to be opportunities for you to lose sight of that statement. But I think it's important and imperative that I make that statement clear and boldly, that homosexuality is wrong. Period. I'm also going to say homosexuality won't keep you out of heaven. How do I know that? Because being a heterosexual doesn't get you in heaven. I want you to let that resonate a little bit. Sometimes we have come into these topics, if you will, these inevitable conversations where it's like, this is worse than this. Therefore, anything here is to be debunked. But what I want to point out to you is Paul's list starts. It starts with this, with the sexual nature. And the reason that I want you to understand this is that that's not where his list concludes. It's a very natural place to start, because God has built us for relationship. And the first thing that might show a crack if we are not living our lives as God has intended for us to live our lives is our relationships. So the first thing that there is a crack in is our relationship. And what I want you to see is that Paul chooses to use a language of giving up the natural for the unnatural. I love that language because it's creation language. It takes us back to the creation where God, if you remember, before there was anything, there was God. And he hovered over the waters and saw, and it's this idea of chaos. And what God did is came in and brought order to chaos through his creation. And there are things that are natural. And in the natural, it's in God's creation. This is what God created, natural order. And when natural order gets disrupted, what happens? Same thing that's before creation, chaos. And so in the midst of this, I want you to see that when Paul chooses to use this, he's saying, you are choosing an unnatural order. Who is choosing an unnatural order? Anyone who puts themselves and their desires above who God is. Paul gives us a list, starting in verse 26. This is where I need my notes, so I don't lose a point. I even highlighted some spots. You can believe that. The first that's mentioned in verse 26 and 27 is a disorder. You know, I heard someone on, I don't know, one of the social media platforms saying, when asked a question of how many genders there are, he said there's two, but there's an infinite amount of mental disorders. And as I thought about that statement, and I've read and spent time praying about this text, I think what you see is a tremendous amount of disorder. And anything that is labeled disorder is not in God's order. It's not in natural order. And so with that being said, we've talked about the sexual disorder, if you will. Verse 29 of this text, it says, they were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness and malice, full of envy, murder, and anger. Actually, I'm going to stop at wickedness. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, and malice. That's an economic disorder. They were full of envy, murder, strife, deceit. They were gossips, slanders. That's a social disorder. They were God-haters, arrogant, proud, boastful, inventors of evil. That's a spiritual disorder. Disobedient to parents, senseless, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. That's a family disorder. And so in this text, often labeled by theologians as this, you know, this total depravity. You know, this total depravity. Oftentimes, what my point is this morning, and I hope that you hear, is that in each of these disorders, there's a disorder that you identify with. In each of them. We highlight one, because it's the start of the list. But so oftentimes we don't ever get to the rest of the list. And the rest of the list has sexual disorder, which was a lot of times we're like, ah, that one doesn't apply to me. Therefore, I'm good. And I will pass down my opinions and judgment on anybody that struggles in this place. Maybe it's economic disorder. Verse 29, filled with unrighteousness, evil, greed, and wickedness. Maybe that's what you struggle with. Or maybe it's a social disorder. You're full of envy, murder, quarrels, deceit, and malice. Maybe it's a spiritual disorder. You're a God hater. You're arrogant, proud, boastful, inventors of evil. Maybe it's a family disorder. You're not trustworthy. You're unloving. You're unmerciful and disobedient. As I've spent time thinking about the full list that Paul gives in this first chapter of Romans, what I see in this full list is that I am in it. And in this full list, there's one thing that is overarching, and it's the beginning of this text. It's saying, I am choosing me over God. It's the me monster. I'm choosing who I am, my desires, over God's. I'm going to suppress truth because I'm not comfortable with that truth. Because that truth flies in the face of who I am becoming. And as a result, we've neglected truth at times in our lives because it doesn't fit the narrative of what we want to be or what we're choosing to be or the things that we're following. I'm telling you here this morning, there is not a single person in here that doesn't have a struggle that's listed here. You are in these pages. Every one of us is in these pages. And if it's homosexuality that or same-sex attraction that is you in these pages this morning, or if it's someone even you know, there's a lot of arguments, there's a lot of debates about all of this. You know, I was born this way, I was this, I was that. How many excuses do we make for the depravity that we have? How many, I think that's the beauty of being reborn. You could say, I was born this way. That's good, because God called you to be reborn. That's okay. You've been reborn. He's saying, I need you to transform from this to who I am. And in the midst of this, there's struggle in each of these, there's struggle for me in this passage. And in this passage, I see myself oftentimes giving in to some of the things that are in this passage. And it's me saying, I'm choosing me over you. I'm choosing Kevin's way over God's way. I'm now saying I'd rather honor what I find honorable and dishonor what I dishonor. Is homosexuality a sin? Yes. Is the rest of this stuff a sin? Yes. Does it have the ability to separate you from who God is? Yes. Will it be a struggle whether you give your life to Christ or not? Probably. Because the reality is, these things have a tendency to pull us away. And each of these things, I'm here to tell you this morning, each of these things has the ability to destroy. Because it's this. What is the sin? The sin isn't homosexuality. The sin isn't malice. The sin is I'm choosing something above God. I'm suppressing who God is. It's me becoming the decider of what is good and what is evil. Remember what I told you guys last week? We're swinging from the branches of the wrong tree. We're swinging from the branches of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We're trying to decipher and decide what is good and what is bad. That is me being God. That is suppressing who God is. I'm saying I'm choosing to decipher and to decide who is God and who is not God. What is right and what is wrong. And by doing these things, I am allowing myself to take the place of the Creator. In 1 Timothy chapter 1:15, turn there real quick. The saying is trustworthy and deserving of full acceptance that Jesus Christ Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners, of whom I am the foremost. I think for us to appreciate this text, for us to understand the complexity of it, the depravity of it, the feeling of uncertainty in it, I think we have to come to it with the humility that Paul is talking about. As far as sinners are concerned, I'm the worst. I'm the worst. Because the last time I checked, homosexuality doesn't keep you from knowing God. Sin does. And I think when we put our humanness on a lot of these things that society, culture has shaped for us, that we've become quiet about, that we don't like talking about. Does anybody like, I mean, this is uncomfortable, right? Anybody really like talking about this? I don't. It's not fun. Hi, bud. He enjoys it because he has no idea what I'm saying. And that's kind of us, isn't it? We'd rather not know. We'd rather not talk about it. We'd rather it not be a reality in the world that we live in today. Because there's a judgment, and this is the beginning of that judgment. God giving themselves up to it. He's saying, if this is really what you want, here it is. That's judgment in and of itself. If the earth ever told the sun, this is how I heard this presented, if the earth ever told the sun, I'm tired of revolving around you. And the sun goes, okay, have it your way. We'll all revolve around you. The natural order of life would begin to unravel. And that's exactly what Paul is saying here. Paul is saying, if God is going to give you up the natural order, he's going to give you a way to the unnatural way that you're choosing to live life. Because it's unnatural because it is not me. If he's going to give you up to that, that's an unraveling of who you are. It's an unraveling to what you stand for. Because the reality is we like standing against certain things, but we don't want to stand against other things. I love Paul's depiction through the book of Romans about circumcision and how, and you guys have probably heard me say this before, it was the one thing that kind of was a driving wedge between Jews and Gentiles as Gentiles are getting added into the church. The Jews are saying, hey, congratulations, you got Jesus. Now there's a few other things you need to do. Chief among those is circumcision. Because there's a covenant between God and Abraham about circumcision. And if you're not circumcised, though you have Jesus, you can't really be in. And so they made that the chief argument. The chief argument between the Jew and the Gentile was circumcision. What's the chief argument today? What's the thing today that is hindering our ability to reach outside of those doors and learn how to love people who are sinners just like me? Because as Paul says in 1 Timothy 1:15, I'm the worst. I'm the worst. No, I've not struggled with homosexuality, but there's a lot of things on that list I have. Does that make me better? No, it just means that God is who he said he is, and he wants Kevin to come to that realization, and either he's going to be Lord of my life, all of it, or I am. Y'all think about it like that? He's either going to be Lord of all of my life, or I am. But he can't just be Lord of part of your life. He wants all of who we are, even these struggles, even the things that oftentimes we just can't seem to get out of our head. that we struggle with, that seem to pop up all the time. And so many times in our lives, we give ourselves over to those things because it's just easier. And God's there saying, I want to be Lord of all of it. I want to be Lord of the victories. I want to be Lord of the mess. I need you to trust me with these things. Because the more you come into the realization that the sin that Paul is genuinely talking about is suppressing who God is in our lives and making ourselves to be that. We're worshiping things. The unreligious, I actually have a note on this. Jordan Peterson, it's someone I didn't know anything about. Anybody ever, besides Hunter, know who Jordan Peterson is? Got a few people. And I don't know if I can find this note. There's a religious and an unreligious suppression of God. The irreligious or unreligious expression is to be an atheist. And the atheist denies that God exists. But in that denial, they don't really, all they're doing is suppressing what they currently genuinely know. They're just choosing not to look. The one that's more applicable to us today is a religious version of suppression. We substitute out the true God with a version of Him we can control. We substitute out the true God with a version of Him that we can control. And I think what you see in this text is that. I think that's why Paul starts with suppression of truth. We're saying, man, it just doesn't fit. It's like us good Christians, heterosexual Christians. We read the first part of that text and we're like, uh-huh, it says it's wrong right there. Is it wrong? Yes, it is. Did you finish the chapter? And do you find yourself in the pages? Because I find myself in these pages. And oftentimes when we find ourselves in hard pages to read, and we choose to pretend like it's not there, we're suppressing the truth of who God is. And we're making a substitute. And we're substituting ourselves in. Or some other version of who God is that we can manipulate and control. This text has been haunting me for several weeks. Because it's even helped me, hurt me, frustrated me, as I look at some of the sins that the church has isolated and embellished to say, you can't do this. And the whole time we're sitting there concealing and suppressing some of this other list. So my challenge for us this morning is we're all sinners and we've all fallen short of the glory of God. God has called us to be reborn into Him. You can say, I was born with anger, I was born with this, or it doesn't matter what you say, or I developed it in my life. He's saying, I want you to die to that. I want you to die to homosexuality. I want you to die to spiritual disorders, and economic disorders, and family disorders, and social disorders, and sexual disorders. I need you to die to those things because I need to live in you. And if I'm alive in you, you are in the natural order of how I decided life should be lived. Because don't forget, at the very beginning of time, Eve was faced with the decision of right and wrong. Knowledge of good, knowledge of evil. Determining what that was for her own existence. She chose poorly. And as a result, we live in a fallen world. But each day we have those choices. We get to choose between right and wrong. The question becomes not the choice, but who's defining it. Y'all get that? Like, that just makes perfect sense to me. Too many times we're defining what's good and evil. That's living in the wrong tree. If God is defining what is good, if God is defining what is evil, and I submit myself to His definition of what those things are, it will transform my existence. I will have a heart of humility, a heart like Paul. Paul, one of the greatest people we know in the New Testament, that wrote so many of the letters that we have an opportunity, this being one of them, to read. He's saying, I'm the chief sinner. And I want you to understand, with a humility and approach to life like that, There isn't judgment towards other people's sinfulness. All there is a desire to be honest with them and to love them into the kingdom. God's desire for his children is that we be a part of his kingdom. But what kingdom? My version of his kingdom or his kingdom? Because he has challenged us to be a part of his kingdom, the kingdom in which he defines. And for us to be a part of that kingdom, it should come with a tremendous amount of humility because we don't belong in that kingdom. We only get to go to that kingdom because he died to give us an opportunity to grant us access to that kingdom. So anytime you start thinking of yourself more highly than someone else out there, you're putting yourself in the God seat. And what's Paul saying? Man, I don't care if you're Jew. I don't care if you're Greek. I don't care if you're this. I don't care if you're that. God's word can transform you into his reality, not into yours. God has called us to live in his kingdom, not some secular cultural view of what that kingdom looks like, but his kingdom. So this morning, my challenge for us as Christians, as we read some of these hard texts, and there's more coming, is that we get to a place where we understand our sinfulness, not as an excuse to have a victim mindset. We are called to be loving, and part of being loving is being honest. And in that honesty, sometimes there's pain. My challenge for us, though, is that we be a people who are loving enough to be humble with our own struggles and our own walk that is frustrating at times in our lives. Enough to see people out there that may have a struggle that looks differently than mine. But ultimately, at the root, it's the same. It's a disorder. It's chaos. It's unnatural for natural. God is saying, I'm natural. I put it all into order and into existence. Be a part of me, because there you will find it. Not disorder, but order. This morning, if there's anything that we can do for you,